welcome to the Geek Night In, episode 39. I'm your host, Laura. I'm here with Gemma Thompson this week. That's a lightsaber.
That's my lightsaber.
And I'm here with no one else this week. It's just me and Gemma. Tilly's at work, and all of our schedules got a bit mixed up because I was at E3, and that my travel was on Sundays both times, which kind of messed up our Sunday recording schedule a little bit. But it's fine. Me and Gemma are here, and Gemma's got a lightsaber. I'm going to stay away from her in case she chops my hand off. So, yeah, well, why do you have a lightsaber on the podcast? Tell us about your lightsaber.
Well, I have a lightsaber because basically the entirety of my clan decided to get lightsabers. Well, the majority of our clan. And so we got them all shipped over from America because there's a company called Ultra Sabers which makes them.
And this is like, I saw a little bit of you posting about this. Am I right that it's like, it has USB connections, so you can like change the color of it and all these fancy things you can do with it or something?
Well, actually, yeah, you can change the sound, they call it sound font. So I can change the sounds. Well, I don't know why I would. It's quite a classic sound. But actually the colors you can change by just putting little plastic discs in, and it's got this really powerful LED which shines up the shaft of like an interchangeable blade. Ooh. Which is good for us because we swap out the blade to a Ludo Sport standard one, which can actually take a bit of a pummeling.
And how much did one of those set you back roughly?
I believe it's in the region of 2,200 kronor, which
I don't know what
like
that is in real money.
170, 180 pounds.
Okay, so.
I think that's without shipping. Okay. And it also didn't include the customs charges, because I completely forgot that shipping from the US means that occasionally EU customs get onto us. So thank you, Tullverket.
Yeah, thanks for that. Yeah. But anyway, hooray, you have your own lightsaber now, which means you are one step closer to becoming the terrifying Sith that I fear you will one day become.
Oh, yes. I mean, I've got my Sith color blades all ready to go. Yeah, but basically, I decided I had to have this before Nine Worlds, because I am bringing it to Nine Worlds.
This is exactly why I'm scared about you coming to Nine Worlds now, that I'm going to turn up to run one of the conferences and you'll just walk in the room, big black hooded cloak on with your lightsaber, and you'll just be like, it's time. I'll be like, no, don't kill me, Sith.
Note to self, must get hooded cloak.
Yes,
I don't actually have one of those.
You need a big black Sith cloak.
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of like more of a subtle Sith.
Yeah.
But I am hoping that now that Ludosport London has announced their dates, I'm hoping I can bump into somebody at Nine Worlds who does Ludosport and duel them, because it would be awesome.
And also, if you're a London-based person who listens to this podcast, go do Ludosport. Go do some lightsabers. I would do it if I weren't like 3 hours each way from London.
Alas.
Slightly inconvenient for me, but anyway, we should talk about some things from the week, so... Shall we start with the thing that had me gone for the last couple of recording days?
Yes.
A good place? Yeah, E3 happened. Have you been following up on E3, Gemma?
Little bits of it. I must admit, I've actually mostly been following the coverage from Offworld, because they do quite nice offshoot kind of things. And also, it's kind of there's been a surprising indie turnout, I think.
Yeah, like, there's
I didn't realize a friend of mine was going to be on stage presenting.
Oh, which
for example.
Friend of yours?
Oh, Sharida Halato, who made Beyond Eyes.
I was about to bring up Beyond Eyes, because last time I saw Beyond Eyes was back in September last year at EGX. And for anyone who doesn't know, this is an indie game where you play as a young blind girl who's trying to find her cat that's gone missing. And it's all to do with exploring the world through other senses and revealing the world in a way that sighted people can see through the use of this character's other senses. It's a really interesting game. I'm not going to lie, the last time I saw it, it was in really rough condition. It's an idea that I found fascinating since I first saw it, but back in September last year, the build was breaking on me and things were failing to load and the game was crashing, and it wasn't in a good state. Since then, Sharida, the developer, has signed on with Team 17, yes, Team 17, who have basically just given her a bit of extra, like, programming power, given her a few extra programmers to throw at things, and my goodness, that game's coming together really nicely now. Like, all of the little technical hiccups that were making me hesitant about that game are gone, and I'm like, yep, this is the game that I was hoping it would be. I want this game already.
And it's wonderful, like, just the diversity angle of it, I suppose. You've got a female protagonist who, like you say, it's about blindness. It's an interesting point of view to come from.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see how people with closer first-hand experience than myself react to that game once it's released. That is a big thing for me still. But yeah, it was really nice to see her. She got some time on the Microsoft conference, didn't she, I think?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, woo, she's up on stage. That was very cool. Was there anything else you saw at E3 that you were like, oh, that's a cool thing that I want?
Well, I was actually quite impressed with the HoloLens demo from Minecraft.
They did a really good job with that, didn't they? Again, for anyone who doesn't know about this, the HoloLens is Microsoft's their answer to something like the Oculus Rift, your sort of virtual reality solutions. But the difference with this one is rather than being virtual reality, where you put on a headset and all you're seeing is the game world, it's augmented reality. So it's a sort of a clearer piece of glass that things are projected onto so that you see bits of the game in your real world environment. Is that a good way of explaining the difference?
Yeah.
I guess. So where a lot of companies usually have problems showing off virtual reality because it's a very insular thing. You put on this headset and only you can see it. And it's very difficult to demonstrate that on show at a conference.
Yeah, it's telling in Oculus Rift when you usually see two circular screens and it doesn't look at all good when you're just viewing these two screens, but what's actually being projected is the two screens that people see.
Yeah, and it's one of
right
those, if you happen, it's like if you happen to already own a virtual reality headset, then you could see what's going on in the press conference.
Yeah.
And what Microsoft managed to do is, because theirs is an augmented reality setup, they basically put like one of these lenses over their camera lens on one of their cameras, so that it's like, hey, if you were wearing a HoloLens, well, basically we've put a HoloLens over the camera so you can see what you'd see through HoloLens.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a really impressive demo of like a Minecraft world coming up out of someone's table and them interacting with it while someone else interacted in that same world on the TV. And that was really cool.
Yeah, it's worth tracking down. So I think Microsoft put up a whole bunch of their clips from E3. So I think if you type in Minecraft HoloLens demo, then you'll get it.
Yeah, Minecraft HoloLens E3 will probably bring it up. So
yeah,
I was really impressed with how well they found a way to show off augmented reality to people who haven't tried it. Equally, if they can get the price down low enough on that, children are going to be begging their parents for that this Christmas. Like if they can get it that down to Christmas present from the family for a child money, then that is going to be on so many children's like Christmas lists now.
One thing I didn't realize until you said that is that actually that's like the antidote to that common problem which has plagued houses for 20 plus years. It's like, get the kids a home game console. And like, I grew up in the days when we had one decent TV in the house. And that TV would then be occupied with the Sega Mega Drive.
Yeah.
Like, you completely get around that problem then, because the kids are playing with the table.
Yeah, it's interesting. And, like, again, I think if they can get this to, like, English prices, if they could get this to about £120, maybe, this could end up being a huge thing at Christmas this year. If they can get it to the 100, maybe a little over £100 level.
It'd be an interesting one, actually, for Minecraft tech, because one of the things I've been eyeing up recently is the Minecraft game band. Have you encountered that?
I have. I got sent one of those to review, so I've experienced one of these.
Okay. Sadly, the price point is too high for me at the moment, but it's...
Yeah,
it looks like a good idea.
It's a device.
It's a wearable band which has a USB flash drive in it, which can run Minecraft. So you have this wristband, which has also got LEDs on it that you can actually decorate using an app or whatever. And then you just like unclip it from your wrist and plug it into any computer, and there you go, you got your Minecraft world running.
Yeah, it's a fairly subtle affair. Like I was expecting when I was told I was being sent a Minecraft watch, I expected it to be a much more sort of like kiddie design. It's a fairly classy looking LED watch. You can sort of program the things to come up on the screen and stuff, but primarily it's a well-built, sturdy watch that, yeah, it has bootable from USB versions of Minecraft for Windows, Linux, and Mac. Let me try that again. It's got bootable versions of Minecraft for Windows, Linux, and Mac, as well as having like a utility where it will, every time you run Minecraft from there, it will back up your servers, your saves, any of your online data. It just makes a backup of everything on the watch. And it's a really nice bit of kit. It's something I never would have bought, but having tried one, I could certainly see the appeal of it.
As somebody who does a lot of games development clubs with girls, it's like I'm immediately seeing the appeal of like it taps into the aspect of games, I think, which I wish I'd had that as a child, basically.
Oh, goodness.
That's why
yeah.
I want it.
I am so envious of children today. I'm just like, oh, God, you have it so good. But, what else happened at E3? I really liked, there was a lot of really interesting looking games with female protagonists and female protagonists added into sequels of games this year at E3. And it was really nice to see that it just wasn't a big deal at all. Like, Sony had a really fantastic looking game called Horizon, where you play as someone who basically is some human tribes person in a future in which humanity is no longer the dominant species. The dominant species is giant robot dinosaurs. And it's very much like a Monster Hunter game where you're going around with your bow and arrow hunting robot dinosaurs to harvest energy tanks from their back to fuel your little human colony. And it looked fantastic. There was a really cool game during the Microsoft conference that was shown off called Recall, where you play as this woman who has a robot dog, and the robot dog gets destroyed, and then you put the core of the dog into a different robot, and then the other robot's your companion. Oh, so many cool-looking games. Oh, Kara Ellison is writing Dishonored 2, which has a female protagonist.
Yes, yeah, that was surprise news as well.
That was like,
she announced like a month ago. Like, I think it's the week after I saw her talk at Nordic Game. And then she announced she was going to be leaving Games Critique, and then suddenly, oh, by the way, I'm working on Dishonored 2.
just out of nowhere, it's like, yeah, I'm doing Dishonored 2. You know, awesome looking female protagonist in the trailer. Like, they didn't even show off the male character. They're just like, no, here's the female character. Of course, we show that off because Kara's writing it. Because, of course, because she looks badass.
And Nine Worlds veteran Kara Ellison, she's spoken at both of the... I was on panels with her both times, actually. So she's one of us.
Yeah, I was on a panel with her my first Nine Worlds, I think. So, woo, Nine Worlds buddies, yay!
Is that going to be a Nine Worlds alumni. This is going to be a thing.
I can't call her buddy now, though, because she's in development, obviously. Boo, I don't like anyone in development. Conflict of interest, boo.
I'm feeling better about the fact I've not made any games recently.
It's fine. As long as I don't talk about your games, I'm all right.
Yeah.
So what else was there at E3? I
personally was really excited for the No Man's Sky stuff, but that's partly because a friend of mine is programming it, and also because...
My feelings on that are still... hey, I want to actually get my hands on this game before I get excited, because the last 3-4 times I've seen it, it has been looking completely the same. Doesn't look like anything's changing.
So, well, there was a trailer that I saw, at least. I think it was part of Sean Murray's demonstration of it, like his presentation. Yes. They were showing some more gameplay, so it's actually going around collecting research on things.
They showed some of the things they've talked about before, but they still haven't shown, hey, what is the moment-to-moment gameplay loop and how are you making progress? Because he hinted at, like, the end goal is to get to the middle of the center of the universe, and the center of the universe is over there. My question coming ahead of this E3 was, okay, what is going to stop me from just going there? What's going to stop me from just going over there? And that's what I'm kind of curious about right now, is like, what is that gameplay loop that I am going through as I work my way toward that end point that everyone's working towards? So that's my question at the moment. I really like how No Man's Sky looks. I don't want to get any more excited about it until I have got my hands on it.
I'm still fangirling over it.
I can't blame you for doing that, but equally I'm like, I'm gonna have my critical head on, and I probably shouldn't get excited when this very, very ambitious thing, we still haven't really seen how it works moment to moment. So that's a thing.
I'm feeling like the opposite of you now, because like Hazel's a Ladykade person, so I'm just naturally associated with people who are doing things that, like, it's all just one of us kind of thing. It's a small industry, people.
Yes, I get that. So what else was there at E3?
What was the swag like?
Oh, I got really disappointing swag this year. So leaving the Bethesda conference, they were giving away a load of Fallout figurines, which are now going for a lot of money on eBay.
Of course. We
Yeah,
had
of
the same thing
course.
with the Hitman figurines, actually. I think they were giving those out during. I think it's Eurogamer, actually.
Probably. Xseed Games gave me some terrible little tiny figurines from their games, but because all of their games were games that were basically here's an anime girl fighting people and her clothes fall off and she doesn't look 18, but we swear she's 18 and she's got giant breasts. That was pretty much every game that Xseed had, and every one of their games that I went to preview, they insisted on giving me a little tiny figurine of the character with the underwear of the character on the model had been sculpted. So, yeah, not the greatest of swag. The PC Games show had a load of codes for games that no one really cared about. It had a Twitch bottle opener.
Twitch do hold a lot of parties, actually. They hold the main parties for DreamHack, for example, the esports tournament. So that's probably quite a practical thing.
Oh, they gave us a Pillars of Eternity stress ball, a shirt for Armor 3, a men's XXXL shirt. It wasn't great for swag this year. It really wasn't, but
It's a shame. There were some quite nice Witcher 3 t-shirts going around. I snagged one of those at Creative Coast Festival.
Nice. There is one thing we have to bring up before we finish the E3 topic. Sony's conference with the three games that no one thought would ever happen.
Of
So
course, yeah.
Sony's conference had The Last Guardian, Final Fantasy VII Remake, and Shenmue 3.
Yeah.
I
I
don't
must admit,
think
I only.
anybody called that.
I must admit, I only really have the connection to the latter two. I'd not at, like The Last Guardian seems like such a generic name that I thought I'd already probably heard of it, but couldn't name it. So I feel really
Quite
awkward for
possible.
that because a lot of people have been over it.
Yeah, it's one of those I was really into like Shadow of the Colossus, and as such, I'm very excited for whatever that team put
Oh,
out next.
so it's Team
Yeah,
Ico.
this is Team Ico.
Oh, cool.
So it's Ico and Shadow of the Colossus, and now The Last Guardian, where you are a young boy and there is a big giant chicken dog. And that's the game.
Because of course.
Yeah, of course. So, yeah, Sony had a very impressive conference of things that are at least a year away.
Yeah.
So.
It's been great watching. Like, I have actually watched some of the reactions videos for the Final Fantasy VII remake
Oh.
reveal. Like all the people watching along, it's like, don't make this a movie, don't make this a movie, don't make this a movie. And then it's like they keep the way they framed it was so ambiguous in places. Like they flash up the Final Fantasy VII logo, and you're still like, please don't make a movie, please don't make a movie. And then the word remake, they're just like, ah!
Yeah,
Going
that
mad.
was the one moment at E3 where my cold, cynical heart just melted. And in spite of the fact that I know that this probably is going to be 2, 2.5, 3 years away, I shed a tear. I was in that room and I shed a single tear. I was like, ah!
Yeah,
That
and
was
there was
quite a room to be in, yeah.
so many good screenshots as well of like the everyone's talking about like how are they going to do the cloud cross-dressing scene? Like that is going to be an interesting one to see
Well,
how
they've
they deal
acknowledged
with
they're
that.
going to do it. They've said in
Excellent.
interviews it's going to happen, so hooray! Yay! So, we should probably move off of E3 and go on to something that we can finally talk at some length about because you've finally seen it.
Oh yes.
Mad Max Fury Road.
Yes, I've seen that twice now.
Yeah, and I think the fact you saw it twice says something about your enjoyment.
Yeah, I went with my husband the first time. Neither of us have seen any other Mad Max films. But thanks to you guys, I mean, we were assured that it was nice and standalone. And it's just like it's worth saying actually, it's such a well-edited film because you go into it and like the way the story is told is so you're not drip-fed anything. Things happen and there is clearly a world behind it, but it straddles that awesome line between like you don't actually have to know the backstory, and for all I know, there probably isn't a reason why certain things happen. They just are. You accept them, you move on, and you watch the gorgeous cars all like driving around.
And it's just this incredibly visual story where it gives you a world and says, this is just the way the world is. You don't need to know why. Just take it for what it is. And there are little bits where, like, it never labors on any point, no matter how big or small. Like, there's a great example. You know, about halfway through the film, they're discussing driving in a single direction for hundreds of days.
Yeah, and there's like 120 days.
Yeah, and it's like, how can you, from Australia, drive in one direction for that long across what they're calling the salts? And then it's like, oh, the ocean's evaporated. That's what the salt is. It's just an ocean that's no longer there.
I hadn't actually twigged that.
Yeah, like someone pointed that out to me, and I was like, that's a thing that makes a lot of sense when you realize it, because that's how they from Australia can drive for 120 days, because there's no ocean anymore. And like, it's things like that that are just really clever little bits of world building. That there's a lot of things like that in this film that are just, the clues are there. If you work them out, then that's something else you know. If you don't, then the film still keeps going. I really like, how do I put this? I really like the core cast of female characters, and the fact that while in any other piece of media their backstory would be shown to you, this doesn't feel the need. This film is happy to tell you, oh, this happened to these characters, and it never feels like you need to be forced to watch it. Because, like, a little bit spoilery here, nothing too spoilery. Skip ahead, like, 30 seconds if you don't want to hear this. The fact that, like, Furiosa, her backstory basically comes from she was an abused sex slave, and they never feel the need to show you that. It's like, okay, you've hinted at that, that's what your past is. We don't need to see that. We believe you. Like, it's little things like that that this film just does so well that I'm just like, oh, I love this film.
It's brilliant in its subtleties, and I think a lot of that is portrayed in the acting, particularly from the lead whose name has completely gone.
Charlize Theron?
No, Max.
Oh, I forget who plays Max.
Oh, no, I know his name.
Yeah, like, so do I.
I'm a fan of his, and anyway.
Give me one second to look him up, and we'll edit around that so no one needs to know.
Tom Hardy.
Yes, Tom Hardy, you beat me there.
There we go. Mental Google. I literally didn't Google it, I just remembered. I really like him as an actor anyway. But like, a lot of the subtle expressions he has are some of the most enjoyable parts for me, I think.
I really like the fact, and I can understand, having now seen it, why I'll address this, why a lot of men's rights activists were upset about this film. It's a Mad Max film in which, for the first, like, third of the film, Max is very literally a hood ornament.
Yes.
And, God, and the entire film is basically the film of, hey, Mad Max met these people who were cooler and more badass than him. He deferred to their judgment at every turn. And when they saved the day, he's like, okay, I didn't have any part in saving the day. I'm going to back away and let you have your moment of glory. Yeah, like, it's a Mad Max film where Mad Max bumps into these cooler characters and kind of follows them around a bit.
And I love how that's just more sensible. Like, he is a survivor, and he understands that by handing the rifle over to Furiosa and letting her take the shots means he can just carry on. He's cool with that.
Well, it's even more than that. It's he hands her the rifle, and then he allows himself to be used as a rifle stand.
Yes.
It's just that moment of, I can still be helpful to you, but I'm going to be more help as a rifle stand than I am as the person wielding the rifle.
Yeah.
And it's just like, people say, like, I saw a lot of people being like, oh, well, I've seen complaints for a while that this film finally is like my go-to example for how to combat now. And the complaints that I always see from a lot of guys of, oh, well, I can't have female characters be masculine because then they aren't feminine, and they can't be feminine because then they're not cool, and oh, this and that, and why can't I make a character anything because it's always wrong. It's like, no, what you do is you have multiple female characters, therefore no one female character has to embody your opinion on every woman. Yeah, and that is what this got so well. It's like, here is an ensemble cast of very varied female characters.
Yeah.
Oh, I love this film. I love this film so much.
And of course, the The guitar with the
Oh, the
guitar
flame
guy is
throwing guitar
just,
man.
oh, it's every
And
bit as good as I was led to
the
believe.
oh, and Immortan Joe is quite a creepy villain. As is
It kind of reminded me of Baron Vladimir Harkonnen actually from Dune. This
I can
concept of this guy
yeah.
with like covered in plastic, and it's got that. It's something embodied in both the Harkonnens in the Frank Herbert Dune film, but also this plasticky sheen is found quite a lot in Terry Gilliam's films as well. Things like Time Bandits and, well, why are
Yeah.
names struggling to come to me at the
Oh.
moment?
Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
Brazil, yeah.
Also,
But this sort of icky feeling, but just kind of like it's that sort of vibe, I
yeah.
think.
Also, the main sort of, I guess the main henchman guy, Nux. Do you know who I'm on about?
Yes.
Yeah. His character arc in this film is amazing.
Yes. I kind of adore him.
I did not expect the arc to go the way it did, and I was so happy it did. Also, you could do this film with no dialogue and it would still work pretty damn well.
Yeah, actually,
It's
there was more dialogue than I think I was expecting, like certainly at the beginning, but like there comes a point where they just don't have to talk anymore, they just do.
exactly like there are certain bits where like the dialogue definitely helps, but there are certain bits where you could have just like you could probably go 45 minutes without any dialogue and the film would not have lost anything.
Yeah.
And
And
it's just like it's such good visual storytelling.
yeah. But it's great for me as well, because I, of course, both times I've seen it in Sweden, so I've seen it with Swedish subtitles. So it's actually been quite nice being able to follow that dialogue. It's not quick fire or anything, so I can like pick up a few words and a few dodgy swear words, because the subtitling in Sweden is terrible.
Yeah, well, it's just like nicely spread out and it's very well paced. It is a very well paced film, and like I think that this has demonstrated something that I've been saying for a long time, and I'm so glad that like this film's release has sort of proven it, which is it is not that women don't like action films. Give us an action film with a good cast of female characters, we will go to it in droves. Give us a good action film with a good female lead, we're there.
Yeah. I understand this has been reflected in box office
It has.
takings. They seem extraordinarily high.
Oh, yes,
That's
it
just
has
like.
been unbelievably high in box office returns as well as critical reception. It, what's it sat on at the moment on, let's have a look. Is currently sat at 98% rating on Rotten Tomatoes, which seems pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that this film is going to be remembered for some time, I think.
Yeah.
It's,
And
yeah.
I just have so much love for the car designs as well. I'm sorry, it's I might be in a small minority because I'm not really into cars that much, but just the sheer design of them and like the panning shots of where you've got the whole convoys going along, and the fact that they're pieced together,
Yeah.
like the lorries are pieced together from lots of different like sports cars and monster trucks, and it all works so smoothly.
Yeah,
It's amazing.
I'm not hugely into cars either, but this film made me want to be into cars. Because I
Yeah.
was like, it was fascinating the way these machines were sort of cobbled together and the way that the very visual way in which they worked.
Yeah.
Oh goodness, that film. Oh, I want to see it again.
Yeah, I could be tempted to see it a third time.
Yeah, I'm very envious of some people in America where they have something called D-Box seats, which is basically seats that will rumble along with the film. And I know some people in America who've seen them specifically use those seats specifically to see Mad Max Fury Road because every time a car revs, their chair is revving. And I am slightly envious that I won't get to see this film like that because that does seem like a brilliant way to see this film.
Yeah.
But so what else do we have? Any other things we want to talk about?
Well, I've rather caught Lego fever lately. It's something actually we have Britain to blame, because my husband had been seeing, and I've now seen as well, a lot of mentions of a Channel 4 documentary that at the time we're recording was last weekend, called The Secret World of Lego.
Ooh.
It was a nice one. It was like a 45-minute. Just like There aren't that many secrets because Lego is famously like a very secretive company. They don't show you any of the creation workshops or some or anything, but it gives you a bit of background into how the company is run and like how they follow a guy as he gets a job as a Lego designer. And they talk about various people who work with Lego, like from an adult perspective as well. So we watched that, and as I've mentioned on this podcast before, we've been playing through a bunch of the Lego games, and at the moment we're playing Lego Indiana Jones. And then like, we saw this documentary and decided, okay, we've been talking for a while and we miss Lego. Let's just go out and get some Lego. So we found a really nice independent store here in Stockholm called Mr. Gill. I recommend anyone local check it out. And yeah, we basically went in there and I hadn't spoiled anything, so I hadn't looked at the Lego website to see what sort of sets are on or that sort of thing. So we turned up here and found all the architecture sets and the trains and the fact they've got a station with a transit map in it and a detective agency with like fedoras and everything, and just ended up
So
like going a
basically
bit mad.
everything that you love in Lego.
Yeah. This in combination with I used to get the Lego minifigs, the series you could pick up in packets, and they're
Yes.
supposedly blind packets, so you like get a selection, but people work out how they feel and then just sell them on eBay, like this is such and such. So I got like an Astro Girl one in there, she's got a ray gun. So yeah, that combination of that with like fedoras and railway stations, I'm pretty much sorted now.
You've pretty much now able to create your ray gun goth wearing a fedora at the train station playset.
Yes. So we ended up walking out of there with a stupid amount of Lego, to be honest. We got the Lego City Station, a Lego Creator detective agency. It's part of like a, you might have seen pictures actually. It's a really nice set of, like, it basically builds up a street.
Oh.
And it's actually targeted at, like, it's marked as expert, so it's targeted at adults.
Yeah.
And you might get this nice, like, three-story diorama thing going on. And also my husband picked up the Imperial Star Destroyer
Of
because
course.
reasons.
Because of course. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah. And so far we've built the station, but we have no train. That's a different set, so that'll have to come. And
I
yeah,
have a
we're
Hogwarts
working on
Express
the
somewhere that I could give you. I can bring you to Nine Wilds if you still need a train. It needs building, and I'm not sure I have the instructions, but I still have all the parts for it somewhere.
wow.
So,
And yeah, but we're building it together as well, which is really, it's actually working out really nice. I thought we'd have to build separate sets so we didn't argue or anything. But
But
actually
you're having
it's
a
a
good
nice
time working
process to,
together. Aww.
yeah, he mostly sorts out the pieces, and then like I assemble them.
Wow, sounds
Or
like a
we
really
do
nice
steps,
partnership.
like we swap, like you do one step, I do the other. And yeah,
Oh.
it's really nice. So I'm like well into Lego at the moment. And now we want to go to Legoland Billund.
I have had the offer to go to Legoland this upcoming Sunday, and I'm trying to work out if I can make it happen.
Which one?
Windsor.
Nice. I have
Yeah.
been to Windsor, but I was too young to appreciate it.
I was about 9, I think, last time I went to Windsor. So,
I have a Lego
yay!
driving license somewhere.
So do I, somewhere. I also have a medal for panning for gold.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got those.
So what else do we have? Oh, I've got some tabletop games I played this week for the first time to talk about. So I was in LA for E3 last week, and I had a couple of extra days after E3 just because of how flights worked out. And I got to meet up with this lovely person called John and spend a day doing tabletop role-playing games. And there are three games in particular I came across that I had never played before, all of which were really, really interesting and I want to pick up. So, first of all, there is a really simple one called Zombie Dice. You have a tube. It is full of dice. You are a zombie. You roll three dice and see how many brains you get. You can then re-roll some of them. Basically, you're trying to get as many brains as you can from rolling these dice, but if you get shot three times during that set of rolling dice, then you die and you don't get any of the brains that you're accumulating. So it's about like, how far can I push this? Some of the dice have a higher chance of getting shot or a higher chance of getting brains than others. And it's basically about how far can I push this and can I get to the correct number of brains before anyone else? And
we actually usually take a tube of it to board games nights because it's a really good warm-up game.
Yeah, it's a very simple, easy game that like just gets everyone going. After that, I played a game called Resistance, where half of the, well, not necessarily half, some of the, most of the people at a table are members of a resistance, and a couple of people at the table are spies. And the spies know who the other spies are, and no one else at the start of the game knows who the spies are. And you go on these missions, and you have to pass three missions, either pass three missions as the resistance or cause three missions to fail if you're a spy. And it's all to do with like working out who the spies at the table are, because like if you send four people from the table on a mission and someone, you won't know who, but someone makes the mission fail, you'll be like, right, one of these four people's a spy. And it's all to do with trying to deduce who the spy is so that you can go on missions without them being there and not let them go on the missions. And it involved a lot of everyone shouting at each other and accusing each other of things and being like, you're the bloody spy! Ah! And it was a lot of fun. It was getting fun kind of angry at people. And then the last one that we played was Epic Spell Wars of the Battle Wizards, where you have a deck, like a handful of cards handed out to everyone. And it's all to do with trying to take down everyone's hit points by combining like the left, center, and right hand portions of spells that involve various dice rolls. And if you use spells of the same type, you get more dice to roll to increase the power of things. But yeah, it's all to do with fighting other wizards by combining spells with ridiculous over-the-top names.
And really quite vivid illustrations as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Any of us seen it played on tabletop? And it's kind of worth seeing that for the voices Will Wheaton puts on in particular.
That doesn't surprise me. Yeah, some of the bits of art are a shock to see in your piece of, in your spell, to say the least. But yeah, they were all a lot of fun, and I came back being like, oh darn, now I want to buy three tabletop games, even though I very rarely have a chance to play with anyone.
Is it me, or does the artwork reminds me of like early 90s toys that I was vaguely familiar with? That sort of almost neon bright coloured stuff and usually quite gory.
It's that sort of like that era of like 90s comics where everything was a bit neon and adult oriented and a bit sort of like almost like splashes of neon paint thrown at it.
Rather a lot of snot for some reason.
Yes, a lot of viscera of varying types. But yeah, it's a really interesting game. So yay, I found three new games that I quite like. Yay! Have we got anything else this week, or is this a good point to wrap up?
I've kind of gone black, actually. It's been so long, and there has been much news. But news has happened.
News has happened. I can't remember.
Absorbed by E3, basically.
Yeah, I can't remember anything other than E3, because I literally got about 45 minutes before we recorded this. I got home from flying home from LA, so I'm not quite with it, but yeah.
Oh, an announcement, actually, of sorts. Again, it's rather a Sweden-centric thing, but I will be running a Twine workshop at Närcon in Linköping next month. So if anybody in Sweden like is going to Närcon, which for those who don't know is basically the Nordic region's premier like cosplay and anime kind of, they do games and stuff as well, but it's the closest thing I've found locally actually to Nine Worlds Geek Fest. But yeah, I'm going to be doing a Twine workshop there.
Look at you going to places I've never heard of. Okay, yeah, so I think that's it for this week then. So while we're on the subject of things that you're doing, Gemma, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at Raygun Goth, which is where I tend to post most of my ramblings, links to my photo albums, and generally what I'm up to. And also on Patreon at Raygun Goth as well. I'm basically Raygun Goth everywhere. And also on YouTube, where I am the Raygun Goth, annoyingly. And that's where I've been putting my Let's Plays. I'm now to episode 6, I think, of Regan Gothenburg.
Woo!
And we've unlocked metros.
Metros, look at you.
After I nearly broke the city, so...
Goodness. So what else can I... I need to do sentences. I'm a bit rusty on this. Yeah, and you can find me on Twitter at Laura K. Buzz. That's where you'll find me on most things. Laura K. Buzz on Twitter, Patreon, iTunes, YouTube, whatever have you. So thank you very much. We will have another episode for you again soon. Thank you very much. Bye.
Bye.